This is the Second Chair Leadership Podcast, and I'm Matthew Johnson. This is the podcast designed to help you lead your church or nonprofit at the functional level. You can follow future podcasts at secondchairleadership.com. I'm glad you're able to tune in today for this podcast because it features an interview I was able to do just a few weeks ago with Pastor Chester Mitchell. Pastor Mitchell leads Capital Community Church in the Washington, D.C. area, and he's recently released a book called The Gravel Road to Heaven. It's an excellent read, and you can find a link to purchase the book right on the secondchairleadership.com page. And you can also see the show notes for this interview, which sort of highlights for you the different topics and themes that Pastor Mitchell references in this podcast. You're really going to enjoy the good content he has to share with you. If you're a first chair leader or a second chair leader, as Pastor Mitchell talks about his book, I think you're really going to see his vulnerability and how it calls leaders to see themselves and to think honestly about the way they lead their people. So without further delay, here's my interview with Pastor Mitchell. I'm sitting down today to talk with Chester Mitchell. Chester is the founding and lead pastor of Capital Community Church in Ashburn, Virginia, a city that sits about 30 miles out from Washington, D.C. Chester and his wife founded Capital Community Church, also known as CCC, about 17 years ago. And I just want to say at the beginning, Chester, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with me today on the Second Chair Leadership Podcast.
Matthew, it's an honor to have you come out and be with us, and it's my honor to spend some time with you.
Well, thank you. I am mainly here because I want to talk to you certainly about leadership. You have a proven track record of that, but you recently released a book called The Gravel Road to Heaven.
Yes, and yes, yes.
I like the subtitle too, which says Walking with God Through the Grit of Life. Anything that can include the word grit, I think. So I think that's great. And I was privileged actually to have a signed copy sent to me, is how I got connected with your book, by a member of your church.
Yes.
And at a very poignant time for me, I started reading it and have really drawn a lot of strength from it. So for those who maybe aren't familiar with your book, maybe they've heard of it but not heard about it, what is The Gravel Road to Heaven about?
You know, Matthew, I had it in me, and I've had it in me to write. In fact, I'll tell you a quick story. The great missionary to Asia, Steve Willoughby, just went to be with the Lord. And Steve had been here at our church for a missions conference. He came, and we had not met formally. And so we're in my office upstairs, and I was between the two services, and we're just talking like you and I. And he stops, he looks at me, and he reaches out, he takes me by the hand, and he said, Chester, he said, I got a word for you. And so I just breathed deep because here it was coming. He said, I see books inside of you. He said, I see not just one.
Wow.
He said, I see several books inside of you. And that had been in me. But Steve Willoughby just really saw that and called it out. And I wanted to write this book. In fact, I'm working on the second one. We'll talk about it a little bit later. But I wanted to write this book on the premise that we walk with God down gravel roads. Mm-hmm. And one of the chapters in the book, in fact, I started writing, and essentially I was writing to people like me and you, mm-hmm. just normal people, and saying to them, you know what? Everybody is walking with God through a unique set of circumstances. Everybody is going through something. Everyone is dealing with something. And so the question was, how do we walk with God through our situations? You're raising your kids. That's a unique time in your life. You're going through cancer. You're going through a divorce. I've been a singles pastor. How do you walk with God through the grit of life? And I essentially say to people that we never get to heaven on smooth roads. Everybody will get there, going through the grit of life. Of course, I was born in Jamaica, and I'm writing just chapter after chapter, and I thought about it. This is how I landed on the cover and the title. I thought about during the years that we lived in Jamaica, and I lived there until about I was about 12, every summer we would drive out of Kingston, we'd drive about 2 hours to the parish of St. Mary. That's where my grandparents lived. And the road out of Kingston was always smooth, but when we got about 2 miles to my grandparents' road, the road was always gravel. And year after year, summer after summer, we'd go down this gravel road to where they lived. They lived on top of a hill. You could see the ocean. I always thought, you know, for such a beautiful place, sooner or later, they're going to pave this road. And year after year, I'd come back, and the road would be gravel. And I thought, you know what? Yeah, that's a great metaphor. The best places in our lives, the most precious places in our lives, we arrive there on gravel road. So that's how I wrote.
That's really a good concept. I have to admit, I follow you on Twitter, sure. And I paid attention whenever the book was coming out. I thought you did a great job on building interest in the book. You used social media, interviews, and book signings. I wanted to ask you, what did you discover by going through the process of publishing and promoting a book? You've been through it. Talk for a minute about what you really discovered actually going through that process.
It was a huge learning curve, and I'm still on it. And thank you for asking. Just before we hit the play button here, we talked about Michael Hyatt, and for people that are in the writing process that want to write, I would just encourage you to follow Michael Hyatt on Twitter, follow his blog. One of the things that I learned, and especially from Michael Hyatt, in the 21st century, in order to get your message out, you have to understand the power of media. You have to understand the power of Facebook, of Twitter. You have to build what is now called a platform. In fact, that's a new terminology, you know, before. And for us preachers, the platform was up there, yes. where you deliver the sermon. Really, the platform is now an electronic platform. It's a media platform. It's a social media platform. It's the people that you have in your tribe, the people who listen to you because you have demonstrated consistently over a period of time that you have something worth saying. You're not going to do this a long time if you don't convince the people that you speak to that you have something to say from that platform. In the 21st century with social media, you now have to say to people, look, I promise you on a consistent basis, if you will listen, I will tell you something that will help you.
Yeah, and I think you did a great job with the actual end product that adds value. I have to say that I think the book is very well written. It's witty, humorous at times. I find myself, sure, you know, laughing along with you as you tell a lot of great personal stories, and then sad at times. There's some very deep stories that communicate life issues. It was a very inviting read. It's not a demanding read.
Sure.
And so I would just ask of you, if a person is going to pick up The Gravel Road to Heaven and read it, what would you recommend the best way they approach the book to get the most out of it?
You know, I'm a pastor, I'm a leader, but I think really at this particular stage in my life, I understand that we have stories. People live out, we're living out our stories. What I know now that I wish that I had known earlier is that Jesus Christ was intentionally a great storyteller. So when I wrote the book, I wanted to tell stories. I wanted people to understand that here's a story. Here's my gravel road stories. From my story, I want you to learn something that will help you to live a better story. And so I really wrote the book so that when someone picks it up, they're under no pressure to read the whole thing. I wanted them to pick it up today on Thursday and read a chapter. And a story that I tell is going to speak to them. And they're going to say, you know what? That story helps me with this part of my journey. So I really wrote stories that people could relate to. The book is written, of course, 31 short chapters. I understand that I'm speaking to busy people who want to receive truth in a concise package. And so I wrote to that end.
I think it is laid out very well like that, to where you do not have to read it in the specific order. You can pick a chapter. And then I'd also add that I think it's a great read with someone else. My wife and I have,
sure,
sat down in the mornings We'll read one of your chapters together. Then we can talk about it and even pray together over what God brought to our hearts. So I think it's a very shareable book.
And of course, in the book, at the end of each chapter, I have the section, you know, a step on the journey. What specific step are you going to take? You know, what prayer do you need to pray? What issue do you need to settle?
Yeah, they're good questions. They really don't make you feel like you're wasting your time. They connect with the reader very well. As a matter of fact, I want to ask you about some of the things that I gleaned from the book, and I'd love to just hear you elaborate more on them. You made a statement in the book I really liked. The statement was, religious activity is empty if it's devoid of spiritual renaissance. Yeah, expound on that statement a little bit.
You know, we're busy and we're getting busier. We have more devices now, but we're still busier in our devices were supposed to help us. But you know, sometimes I wonder if my cell phone is a blessing or a curse because people can text me, they can iMessage me, they can call me, they can leave me an email. You know, what's this? We have now more activity, and for those of us that are in church work, we have more religious activity. With all of that stuff, I think we will look back on our time here on the earth and wish that we would have laid down the technology and the stuff and the busyness. The most powerful and precious times in our lives are those times when we get with God and get a word from God, and God speaks to us, and just go have a big cry. Mm-hmm. Go pray through. I'm 54 now. I grew up at a time when, you know, waiting on the Lord was, you know, people talked about that. People talked about not just praying, pray through. Well, it seems like now you rarely hear anybody talk about that because we're so busy.
Yeah.
And really we have more religious activity, but, you know, transformation doesn't happen. When Paul says, be ye transformed, there is no set the clock on that. It's a process. It's slow. It's always longer than we planned on. And so there has to be moments and times that we say, you know what, I need spiritual renaissance. I need transformation. I need God to work on me so I can do the work of God. Craig Rochelle, who's a great author, he has a quote. There's a quote there, and I've heard him say it in person. He said, the way I was doing the work of God was destroying the work of God.
Wow.
The way I was doing the work of God, it was destroying the work of God in me. I don't want for myself, for you, for our listeners on this podcast to do ministry and at the end of the day it destroys us. I don't think God gets any glory out of that.
You do put a lot of personal experiences in the book, which I think are very vulnerable. You talk about some of the challenges you faced in your own walk with God, and there's this one personal story in which you talk about facing your fears at a men's retreat. And I'm not going to give away the story because people need to get the book to get all the details. But yes, in a very comical way, you describe three groups of men at the retreat, men with no fear, men who wanted to prove they could face fear, and then group three, men who were openly afraid. And you called yourself a charter member of group three. And you use that story to talk about facing fear with God. How does that work? How does it work in life for a group three person to really face their fear with God?
I can only speak to myself. Here's what I know. And of course, you're talking to a guy that I was 12 years with Bishop Haney in California. And and God just messes me up with this call to come start a church, which I never wanted to do, never thought I had the skill set to do, but he saw it in me and called it out of me. And so here I land in this pagan environment. I love Washington, but really coming to Washington to me is like the guys who were the first to jump out over Normandy. You know, it's kind of like you're going to find out when you land.
Okay.
You know, nothing in your past experience is going to be there for you. You're going to make it up as you go. What I've learned is you have to allow God to give you the courage to get into situations that really stretch you, that really call something out of you that He placed there that you're not even aware that's in you. And that only happens when you jump off, when you say, you know what, I'm going to put myself in places that only God can help me. Only God can help me. And if later on, and I don't want to get choked up here, if later on people say you succeeded, you will always know it was God.
That's powerful.
It was God.
Well, you do a good job of not only laying out the book to be readable, but you give some great chapter titles.
Oh, yeah.
I think just reading them makes you want to read the book. There are titles like The Land of Dragons, 1947, and The Boys of Brooklyn, The Mystery of R.H. Damon. If people don't want to read those chapters, it's hopeless. But there was a chapter you entitled Ready, Set, Go, and it really spoke to me.
Sure.
You talk in this chapter about walking with God and battling perfectionism. You make this statement, I began to realize that my zeal for perfection hadn't originated with God, but with my wayward insecurity. How have you learned to not allow your insecurities to drive you to reach for perfectionism with God in a way that can be harmful?
You know, I wish I could tell you that I have prayed past that. That is an ongoing work. That is an ongoing work. Here's one thing I know. For those of us who are in ministry, preachers, I would say this, and I use the word we. We are way too competitive. We are way too critical of each other. Our insecurities come out, and we're so competitive. What I realize, and I have still have to work on this, the guys on my team will tell you this, I have to really step back and ask the question, whose kingdom is this? If it's Chester Mitchell's kingdom, then everything has to operate perfectly. Now, there's a difference between excellence and this drive for endless perfection. In fact, oftentimes you see people who have this drive for endless perfection, they end up having major issues in their lives because really it wasn't about God. It was about them. Practically, one of the ways that the Lord's really taught me and is teaching me how to handle that is really laugh at yourself. Be very transparent about your weaknesses. Everybody knows my strengths. When I get up to speak on Sundays or whenever I speak to this congregation, one of the things that I've tried to do is really say to people, here is where I struggle. Here is where I have issues. That way people don't get this idea of me that's not really, when Paul said, by his grace, I am what I am, and his grace that was bestowed upon me was not in vain. Man, he just laid it out there.
Yeah.
He just laid it out there.
Yeah. So there's a level of realness and vulnerability that even in your communication.
Be transparent.
Good.
Be transparent. People will not always relate to your strengths, but everyone can relate to your weaknesses because everybody's got them. Everybody has gravel roads.
That's good. In writing this book, I think I've heard Seth Godin say before that sometimes we don't just write to be heard, we write to hear ourselves or what we're saying. How do you feel that maybe writing this book has really shaped you? Are there elements that you feel like after doing it, there are things about Chester Mitchell that God surfaced or worked on that as you were creating something for others to read, there's just something it did for you?
One of the things it did for me was it allowed me to take things that were inside of me and to really put them on paper and really realize that's me. In fact, when I finished the book and the first copy came in the mail, I just held it and I cried because really I had told about me. Anybody, in fact, hardly a week goes by that I don't have someone call me or tell me here in our church, you know, Pastor, when I read the book, I could see you. I heard you. It was me. I took what was inside of me and I put it on paper because I wanted, there's only so much of me, but really my book can go everywhere. And
true,
it's gone so many places I've never been. But I wanted people to see me and to hear me, the real me, not the preacher me, the vulnerable me, the afraid me, the mistakes that I've made. I speak to them.
Wow, I really appreciate Pastor Mitchell speaking so vulnerably and transparently in his book, The Gravel Road to Heaven. You need to pick up a copy. It is just full of that same sense and tone, and it just helps you normalize your own journey with God, wherever you're at and whatever God's doing in your life personally and as a leader. You don't want to miss part two of the interview. Pastor Mitchell will talk about his leadership of CCC and his leadership of the second chair leaders at CCC. It's full of some great content as well, and that'll be posted to the site here in just a few days. If you'd like to get an email that would update you whenever the second part of the interview is posted to the site, just give me your first name and your email address right there on the main page site, secondchairleadership.com. I won't use that email to send you a bunch of spam. It'll only be used to notify you whenever new content is put on the site. That's all for now, but I look forward to the next time we're together when I can pull my chair up next to your chair and we can continue the conversation about second chair leadership.